Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is Thursday, if you're hearing this on the day it comes out, which means, fellow conspiracy realists, it is time for our weekly listener mail. Matt, Noel, and I have scoured correspondences of varying sources, right? Some sinister stuff, some funny stuff, some mysteries, some global events, some microcosmic events. And as always, we want to thank everybody who took the time to reach out, either at our phone number, 1-833-STD-WYTK, at our email address, conspiracydieheartradio.com, or, you know, saying a name three times into a dark mirror. Sorry if I spooked you. But today we have some really fascinating stuff. We ran into something, a spoiler alert, that I was not aware of over in Argentina. And we'll get to that eventually, but maybe we start a little bit closer to home today. Noel, we received a fascinating email about a murder mystery.
He did. And I know he says all the time, and I think we typically follow through, but this one I do believe is full episode territory. So I'm not going to go into all of the minutia, just kind of set up the story, because it is one that I was not aware of. And it also involves something that I think we all are excited about, is like old Hollywood kind of noir type historical murder mysteries. This ticks all those boxes, and it is a really, really interesting story.
Hey, everybody, quick addendum here, or pre-addendum, I guess. After doing this segment, we reference a source that is Vanity Fair that tells the amazing story that we're about to share with you about Doris Duke. What I failed to do in the segment was mention the name of the writer, the incredible Peter Lance. You can also check out his book, Homicide at Rough Point, which is available now anywhere you get books, from Amazon, etc., and find out more about the story. You can also find out more about Peter's work at peterlance.com. We did, in fact, decide after talking with Peter that we are going to do a full deep dive, possibly two-part episode about this subject. So in the meantime, here's a little snapshot of the story of Doris Duke, the socialite who got away with murder. The subject line of the email that came from a concerned citizen is Doris Duke got away with murder. Who's Doris Duke, you ask? Not Patty Duke. No, mind you, this is Doris Duke, who was the heir to a tobacco fortune. She was a multi-billionaire, or 1.3 billion. I guess that's not multi. She had a single billion plus 300 mil when she died at the age of 80 in 1993 and is largely remembered for her philanthropic works. She had an estate in Newport, Rhode Island that was called Rough Manor. Doesn't that sound like something that's almost like a joke, like Fawlty Towers, or like what was the name of the estate where, you know, from Grey Gardens, right? Mm-hmm. Grey Gardens, Rough Manor. I love it. It just kind of screams old Hollywood and nefarious activities to me. So let me double back really quickly, sort of set up my initial excitement and surprise about this story. But let's read a bit of the email from a concerned citizen. Hello, STDWIT gay, Stididwick. The T is silent. They don't want you to know that the wealthiest woman in the world may have gotten away with murder in 1966. I'm a former resident of Newport, Rhode Island, and while this summer playground for the ultra-wealthy has more than its share of sordid stories, none are more prevalent than the rumor of Eduardo Tirella's murder by Doris Duke. The story goes that Eduardo Tirella was a longtime friend and art curator for Doris Duke. He was also like an interior designer for several of her estates. But he decided to end that relationship and move to Hollywood to become a star. Duke, who was known for her violent temper and had escaped criminal charges for stabbing her common law husband a few years prior, lured Tirella to her summer mansion known as Rough Point, under the guise of needing his expertise to determine the authenticity and value of a statue. Tirella and Duke went to purchase this artwork, but when Eduardo got out to open the large iron gate, Doris slid over to the driver's seat and the car lurched forward and killed him, pinning him against the gate. This is me talking. And they found him essentially like broken and completely dead, wrapped up in the axle, the rear axle of the car. Back to the letter. She claimed it was accidental and no criminal charges were ever brought against her. There were always rumors that it was intentional homicide, but the police were either bribed or intimidated by the prospect of going against someone whose wealth was second only to John D. Rockefeller at the time. Me again, she came from tobacco money, which, as we know, was big, big, big business back in those days when it was just like, you know, the coolest thing you could do was to smoke and all the TV shows were sponsored by cigarettes and they weren't nearly the same kind of, you know, attention and awareness around, you know, how bad cigarettes were for you. So it was just kind of like
you had to ask people if it was okay not to smoke,
exactly.
Right?
It was absolutely a norm, you know, no question about it. Back to the letter, she poured a lot of money into Newport after Tirella's death. And her philanthropy has ensured her legacy and name still play a major role in the culture and economy of the city by the sea. However, just this year, a new witness came forward and the police opened an investigation. Robert Walker was a 13-year-old paper boy who witnessed the incident, but he did not come forward at the time because his father feared he wouldn't live to testify if he had. Thank you for taking the time to read this. I've been a listener for a certain amount of time and would love, I love that. It's very vague, but very cool. A certain amount of time. It's like a man of a certain age or something. And would love to hear what STDWITK thinks about Eduardo Tirella's untimely death in Newport, Rhode Island. Sincerely, a concerned citizen. This concerned citizen linked to several really, really great sources, including a Vanity Fair article from just July 15th of last year called Homicide at Rough Point. And Matt, you had a little takeaway from just the image that is at the header of this article showing Madame Duke, Doris Duke. And I immediately said she looks like a movie star. And you said she looks like a little something else, didn't you?
I mean, who knows how she was feeling when this photograph was taken. But she's definitely looking away and kind of down.
Yes.
And she doesn't have, you know, the look on her face is just kind of blank.
It's very demure.
Yeah.
Well, they chose that photo.
Of course.
I do agree that that's the kind of look that a house cat gives you when you realize if this thing was, you know, the size of a tiger, it would kill me. Right. That's it's a cold, it's a million cold percent. Cat look.
It's something. It's something about the way her lips and her mouth is set with the kind of edges sort of turned down and the sort of partial frown. And the way, and you're right, Matt, the way she's looking away, kind of down and away, is very aloof and kind of this demure. But more than that, there's sort of like an emptiness kind of in her eyes. And whether or not she did this thing, it was very clear that she was a difficult person. I mean, again, she, you know, it was known that she stabbed her common law husband and, you know, got away with that. But here's the thing that's most interesting. A relative of hers has actually said some really interesting things in interviewing, you know, folks and sources for this piece. The writer encountered this quote from Donna Lohmeyer, who is Torella's niece. And she said that it wasn't just a cover-up, but it was something even worse. And this quote is very chilling. She killed him twice. She destroyed his body, then eviscerated his memory. And the reason that she's giving that pretty hot take is that in all of the writings about this woman, Doris Duke, in her obituary, she's referred to and referenced, you know, for her philanthropy and as being this heiress to this tobacco fortune. This incident is never given more than like a line or two. And even there's a mention in this article about a biography of hers where the author essentially writes about her in these very glowing, reverent terms. I learned a new word, actually, reading this article. The author of the book, The Silver Swan in Search of Doris Duke, was a woman named Sally Bingham. And the author of the Vanity Fair piece refers to her reverence and the way she kind of writes about her in these glowing terms as bordering on hagiography, which is a word that I have not heard before. And I'm happy to know what it means. Mm-hmm. It actually refers to writing about the saints or like religious figures. You know, you're speaking of people in these like deified terms. So there's more than a little bit of bias in some of this writing about her. And again, a lot of that philanthropy, or at least a big burst of it, came immediately following this incident. She gave something equivalent to $200,000 in today's dollars to restore historic Cliff Walk, which is like a public kind of promenade like there behind some of these mansions, these rows of mansions on the Newport shoreline. She gave around $10,000 to Newport Hospital, which is actually where she kind of holed up after this incident, I guess, to get checked out, but maybe presumably also not to be bothered by the press. And then she also set up a Newport Restoration Foundation, which renovated 84 colonial era mansions and buildings across the city. And she had more than a bit of a cozy relationship with some of the officials, too, who questioned her. And there was even a situation where the chief of police, a guy named Radice, R-A-D-I-C-E, when he retired, rather than the job going to the next in command who should have gotten the job, it actually leapfrogged him and went to a third person who was the one who interviewed her the night of the event. So there's just, you know, a lot of kind of sketchy potential palm greasings kind of going on here, or at least opportunities for it. But I don't want to go much further than this because the article is dense and there's obviously a lot of speculation around this and a lot of people coming forward to talk about this. So I propose that we do an episode on this. I think it's a really fascinating story.
Yeah. According to this Vanity Fair article, she was making $1 million a week in interest.
In interest alone, right?
Dang.
Wild. Mm-hmm.
I would also recommend agreed. Guys, and I would also recommend for everybody listening now, if you want a bit of a an amuse-bouche, a bit of an appetizer to the entree of a Doris Duke murder episode, do check out our earlier episode, Does Being Wealthy Make You a Bad Person? the answer is chilling, and the more, you know, I personally hate judging people by appearance, although I do think it's fun to, you know, roast a photograph every now and then. Everybody's got bad photos. That's the reality. But if you were to describe her appearance in that Vanity Fair article we've been mentioning, it does very much look like the dispassionate gaze of a very wealthy person. She was tight with Imelda Marcos, got her out of some racketeering charges. It's First Lady of the Philippines. This goes deep. And I think this is also an opportunity to talk about other homicides committed by the wealthy that are open secrets, such as the Chappaquiddick incident, which is the only reason that Kennedy didn't end up being president.
That's
that
was right. How he and got that's punished. Actually something that's sort of satirized in the first season of Succession. If anyone's not watching that show, wants to have a kind of a fly on the wall perspective in the rooms where these kinds of high level, you know, people are hanging around making deals, that show I think does it better than just about any that I've ever seen. Ben, you mentioned her relationship with Imelda Marcos. She was also really tight with Michael Jackson. You know, once you get to a certain level of wealth, you kind of like, those are the only real friends you can have. It's like sort of the rules, right? Everyone doesn't go by that, but like, it certainly feels like that ends up being the case. She also had a long line of, you know, gentlemen callers, let's just say. She apparently had a very high sex drive and was not ashamed of it at all, and was very open about her multiple relationships and, you know, lovers and all that, one of whom was General George Patton. So she was rubbing more than elbows with some pretty pretty powerful folks.
Mm.
And, you know, again, we do want to treat this kind of as like an amuse-bouche, like you said, Ben, for what will ultimately be a pretty filling meal. But we do know that she fought quite viciously in court to keep from having to pay any kind of damages to the family of this this gentleman that she killed, Eduardo Eddie Torella. He made, you know, in the last year of his life, something in the neighborhood of $50,000, which would have been roughly $300,000, you know, in today's money. And it could easily be argued that he would have made money, you know, along those lines for many, many years to come, if not more, because he was heading towards a really potentially lucrative career in Hollywood. Like, he had already, I think he had consulted on a big Hollywood film, had just come back from that. And that was why he was going to tell her that he wasn't going to be working for her anymore, because he had this, you know, new life that he was going to pursue. So the family, I think, pursued a pretty modest sum, you know, in these damages. But she did everything in her power to make sure that they got nothing, which in and of itself is a sign of kind of a coldness, you know. But I say we leave it there for now and look forward to really digging into this topic, because the story's got a lot of twists and turns and goes to some very interesting places, especially in light of new revelations. So let's take a quick break and then come back with some more listener mail.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market
as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back and moving from Rough Point or Rough Manor or whatever it was called, and we are heading to a message from Will that you're about to hear in your ears.
Hey, guys. My name's Will. I've got a story about my great uncle. He was a 3-star general in the Air Force named Robert Bond. He crashed an enemy MiG flying out of Groom Lake back in the early 80s and died. And due to that, they very nearly had to make light of several different government programs. Sorry, I kind of went blank. But yeah, he crash landed this MiG that we weren't supposed to have at Groom Lake. Government tried to cover it up. Being a 3-star general was a little harder than normal. But anyway, there's plenty to read about it. I can send you some links or something if you're interested, but I just thought that it might be a rabbit hole you'd want to go down. Feel free to use my voice if you'd like, and you can contact me, you know, whatever. Thanks a lot.
There we go.
Now that's how you leave a voicemail, Matt.
Yes, here I am. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Contact me. Goodbye. And in this case, it's someone telling us just an intense story about their relative, their great uncle, a 3-star general in the Air Force that crashed a MiG and lost his life and it out of Groom Lake. Of all the places. For anyone who doesn't just know that term off the top of your head, that is Area 51 and the various areas out there in the Nevada test site, as it is so lovingly known.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Heinz 57 mm-hmm. thing, mm-hmm. too. You know what I mean? Where's Area 59? Where's Area 14?
Yes. We'll get to it. Just remind me to talk about Area 25 before we leave this. So first of all, thank you for telling us that story. My goodness. If you could not hear through the phone recording, because sometimes the quality isn't that amazing just because of the system itself, it is Lieutenant General Robert M. Bond. That is the person whom Will is referring to, his great uncle. Again, Lieutenant General Robert M. Bond. You can search about him if you wish on the Air Force's website, af.mil. You can read all about him and his past. You know, before we get into what happened to him, I just want to talk about some of the aircraft, Ben, that I'm assuming you know, over the years on car stuff, all things that float, fly, or drive? No.
Float, fly, swim, or drive, yeah. Float, fly, drive. Anyway, I know.
It stuck in my head. I don't know if I got it fully correct, but I knew the essence of it. just some of the aircraft that he flew over his very long career. The F-86 Sabre, which is also known as the Sabre Jet, is a very interesting piece of machinery that was flown, I believe, fairly early. I think it started in 1947, maybe, like just right at the end of the World War IIs. You know, all of them World War IIs. Mm-hmm.
It's like a Street Fighter vibe. It took a while to count to three.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So a cool plane. The F-105 Thunder Chief, which is just a awesome looking plane, the fighter bomber in the 1950s. There's the Phantom II or the F-4, which is, God, man, just you can look all of these up if you want to. I'm just right now literally looking at their Wikipedia pages, because you can get through Wikicommons some of the photography that was released by, you know, the Air Force over the years. Really cool to look at them. I remember as a kid having posters of these kinds of fighter jets in my room just because I thought they were so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The one that he was supposedly flying on the day that he crashed and died, the MiG-23, which is similar but not the same as the MiG-21, which was a very famous Soviet Union fighter jet that you've seen in probably like many, I'm sure, fictional stories about that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's talk about what happened, why this was a big deal. Groom Lake Area 51 is still not an official thing for much of the world. It's a rumor. Area 51, somewhere out there in the Nevada desert, the government's doing weird stuff out there with stuff that flies around. Not sure what it is. Are they testing aircraft? Are they, you know, taking apart stuff that crash landed in Roswell? Or maybe they're building new stuff from that Roswell crash? All kinds of rumors swirling about this place, Area 51, which continue today, obviously. But back then, we're talking the 1980s, in this case, 1984. Area 51 is very much a legendary place. And Groom Lake, Area 25, all of those. In the Nevada test site. So a person with such a distinguished career within the Air Force to be flying, essentially test flying a MiG Soviet fighter jet in the 1980s. Remember, Cold War is still going on. So the United States having access to Soviet Union weaponry is, you know, maybe not a super secret thing, but it's at least something that you don't want to openly talk about if you're doing any kind of combat missions, test combat missions with your enemy's aircraft. That's probably something you want to keep, you know, quiet about. So according to the story, which you can find in several places, I found it in Time Magazine. It's an article titled Mystery Flight Over Nevada. It was published May 14th, 1984. You can actually find that on content.time.com.
And a shout out to Fred Hoffman, the journalist who originally discovered the information, which, make no mistake, Uncle Sam was ardently fighting to keep this all a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a little Scooby-Doo saying, and they almost got away with it, too.
Well, if it hadn't been for those crazy MiGs.
Right. There we go. I mean, it's also, you know, in their defense, it makes absolute sense to keep that as close to top secret as possible. And I think they didn't even, they wouldn't even deny it, right? It was one of those I can neither confirm nor deny kind of situations until the article that you just mentioned hit the press.
Yep, exactly. You can read it. It's a very short read if you want to look into it. But the official story when Time went to press with this was that he was flying out of Nevada's Nellis Air Force Range. And, you know, while doing this test flight from there, he did have another aircraft flying behind him to kind of watch over him. But he was flying a much faster vehicle. And yeah, it went out of control. And unfortunately, he was unable to stabilize the aircraft once it went out of control, at least according to the story that you can read now. And he attempted to eject. And when he did so, he was going very, very fast. The estimates were around Mach 2 when he actually attempted to eject, or maybe perhaps a little bit slower than that. But his parachute just got torn to shreds, and he suffered injuries as he attempted to eject, and he did not make it. The aircraft, it said, flew down at a 60-degree angle into the desert. But just to jump back to that article, at the time when it was published, I'm going to read you a quote from it. Quote, "Then came an even more intriguing, though also unconfirmed report. Bond was actually flying a Soviet-built MiG-23 Flogger, the primary fighter craft of the Soviet Air Force, with a maximum speed of some 1,700 miles per hour. That possibility drew attention to a little-known aspect of American military training. The U.S. has managed to assemble a mini-squadron of between 4 and 15 of these Floggers, that's the MiG fighter jets, as well as at least a dozen of the more easily obtainable MiG-21s. And it's a really interesting thing where it gets into arms deals, where the United States purchased these craft from Egypt. Because Egypt, they were good friends with the Soviet Union. There was a lot of arms trading going on between those two parties. And then the United States came in and said, hey, we'd love to buy some of those Soviet aircraft off of you so we can use them for training. They probably didn't say that in the room when they made the deal. Mm-hmm. But, but that's what happened. And this whole story just makes me imagine what the United States, what China, what Russia are all doing in their secret, or as secret as they can be, bases across the world right now, training with other aircraft, other, you know, maybe naval vessels or prototypes of such things, or even, you know, we talked about a little bit before, I believe, when we mentioned the strange stuff going on at a test site in China, where they had built like a mobile version of an aircraft carrier that they could fire stuff at. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a normal thing to do. It's a very smart thing to do, honestly, because you'll be able to get experiential training. You'll have the firsthand knowledge of how things can play out. It's the reason why militaries conduct war games constantly, because all the technology that you might possess or that you could buy or manufacture isn't going to be worth as much if you don't know what the other side has. So they're definitely testing the MiG weaknesses. They already knew about some of the stability issues. But right now, it's safe to assume that multiple militaries are doing their best to get the hardware from other militaries, other foreign powers. That's why when the Osama bin Laden raid occurred, there was such to-do about the stealth helicopter. If you guys remember that, that was one of the big losses, was that copter crashing. And that copter, by the way, did not officially exist until it crashed.
Right. Yeah. And there was a whole mission to like figure out what to do afterwards. Oh, crap.
What do we do now?
Well, guys, it's making me think more and more about the used arms trade, or the market, right? Yeah. And we've talked about that a little bit before, how much of the military equipment ended up going to sheriff's offices and local police departments when you're talking about MRAPs and some of those, some of the other weaponry, even small arms. It makes me wonder about the bigger stuff that I don't think we've ever covered on our show before, like what that actual market looks like right now.
Yeah.
And strategically selling your enemies and others who may oppose you at some point your old stuff while you're developing and building the new stuff. I don't know. That to me is really interesting.
Yeah, from AK-47s to retrofitted carriers or destroyers in the world of maritime warfare, it is a huge and silent industry. And a lot of countries have deep tension about who gets to sell what to whom, you know, and not for nothing. I mean, it's not a secret. They don't talk about it too often in your mainstream news outlets, but the U.S. makes a ton of cash selling weapons to other countries. And those countries do things that do not align with U.S. values as stated to voters.
Yeah.
That is like the most diplomatic way to put it. And I also want to point out here that what the general was doing at the time of his unfortunate accident was a necessary thing. You had to test the craft, you know, and this guy had so much experience by that point that he was probably at the top of a very short list of people who both had the clearance to fly a plane that didn't exist and the know-how to do it.
Yeah, but his age was called into question almost immediately upon hearing of this crash.
54.
He's right. 54, yeah. And often, at least from what I've been reading, you wouldn't send someone up of that age in an aircraft alone like that. You would have a co-pilot for safety just because of the physical needs to fly that plane. However, he had just completed at least one major test of his fitness, and he passed it.
You know, also, man, this brings up another question, a bigger conversation, I would say, which is the cover-ups that occur when things go wrong during secret operations. You know, this is a real thing, and these are active conspiracies. Will, first, thank you so much for sharing this story with us. But secondly, you are far from alone, my friend. These are, again, active cover-ups. They are by necessity most times, but we do live in a world where people can one day get that letter that just says, you know, your spouse, your partner, your family member, your child has passed away. And in some cases, there might be a fake or vague explanation. And in some other extreme cases, there's no explanation, because to explain what happened would compromise whatever they were doing. And that does occur. If you are hearing this, you have a story similar to Will's, we would like to hear from you, because I know there are more out there. I know there are many, many more out there. When did this even go public? When did that Times article come out again, you said?
Times article came out very soon after. So I believe it was in April of 84 when General Bond actually passed. And then this came out in May, mid-May. Yeah.
And if that article hadn't have come out, would the Bond family have learned the truth? I mean, journalists are doing serious work. Also, I can't believe it just occurred to me, Will, that is the coolest last name. That guy could really, he could like one up James Bond.
Yeah.
He's like Bond, General Bond.
Yeah, General Bond. I mean? Everybody called him Bobby too, so he was Bobby Bond. It's kind of
General Bobby Bond. Cool. I like it. Rolls off the tongue.
Oh, man. So thanks so much, Will. Definitely write in if you've got a story where we, the public, have been fed, you know, an official story, right, in the news about something that occurred, but you know it was something else because you had a family member maybe involved or privy to something. Gosh, I want to hear that. But only tell us if you're okay with us sharing it, because we'll get too excited. I'll get too excited. Well, that's it for now, Will. We'll be right back with another message from, not you, Will, you, the other person.
Specifically you.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned to follow up on the cliffhanger we left you with at the break. You heard us say you, specifically you, and you may have thought, is it me? Specifically me? Well, yes, it is, if your name is Caro. I don't know if we do an applause to you there, but this was an awesome letter. I'm just going to share the information as is. This is something that I had not heard about. Have you heard about this before?
I don't even know what we're going to talk about yet. So I'm going to learn with everybody else. We're going to jump right in and talk about it.
Okay. Peek behind the curtain, folks. Sometimes when we, because we live in this world, and we go so deep into things, sometimes one of us will learn about something and have that holy shit moment and then write to the other guys on our group thread or however we're talking to each other. And then the other two will be like, oh, yeah, no, that's definitely a thing. Like, no spoilers, but Thunderbirds. I'm really excited about that
one. Oh, anyway. Dude. Mm. Well, but this one, and this is another occurrence, just to give more of that curtain stuff. When some of the emails come through, some of the messages come through, just by in having to go through a bunch of them, you'll get, or my mind will at least track maybe 20% of the contents of each email that comes through. But that 20%, I got Buenos Aires and AMIA. That's what I remember from this, Ben. And I was like, okay, I need to look something about that up later. But I hadn't done it yet, so I'm excited.
So here we go. Caro says, "Dear Ben, Doc, Matt, Noel, I just stumbled upon Stuff They Don't Want You to Know a few months ago, and it's become my new podcast love, so thank you guys for putting together such an enjoyable show." Hats off to Codename Doc there, by the way, for classing up the place. Yes, Matt, cheers. You can't see us, folks, but we're cheersing. We're cheersing Doc. I, for some reason, have a Hello Kitty glass today.
What a week. Have a Topo Chico. Not sponsored.
Topo Chico. So, here's what Caro says. "Would love to hear you all's take on the 1994 AMIA bombing in Buenos Aires, Argentina. It was a suicide bombing on the Argentine-Israelite Mutual Association building, which killed 85 people and injured over 300. Both the government of Iran and Hezbollah are accused of being involved, and there is a lot of just general shadiness and covering up associated with this event from both the Iranian and Argentinian governments. For example, former Argentinian president and current vice president Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner is accused of covering up Iran's part in the bombing, and one of the key witnesses, Alberto Niesman, who filed a 300-page document detailing de Kirchner's role in the event, turned up dead literally hours before he was supposed to testify against her. Government officials ruled it as a suicide." "Yeah, sure," says Caro. "Also, two of the suspects in the planning of the bombing, Mohsen Razeh and Ahmed Vahidi, are now top-ranking officials in the new Iranian government under Ibrahim Raisi. Then there is alleged involvement from Israel as well. Rumors that their secret service, Mossad, hunted down and assassinated most of the perpetrators of the attack." Anyway, I could go on and on because there is a lot more to this, and reading about it has been a wild ride, but I'd love to hear what you all have to say about it if this interests you as much as it has me. Hope everyone's having a superb day. Cheers, Caro." Oh, man, this is blowing my mind. This is revelatory to me. I was not aware of this, but from just this letter, Matt, and just the cursory stuff I was looking into, this is ticking all the boxes for Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I mean, Iran is known for proxy warfare. I mean, so is the U.S., obviously. But Argentina itself has such an interesting, deep, and at times conflicting history, right? So initially, this reminded me of other large cover-ups, especially with the idea of witnesses being assassinated. Like, think of the journalist who was looking into corruption in Malta. Think of the various people who died in the failed prosecution of the Dutroux affair in Belgium. This is nuts. This is wild. Let's get into it. Let's talk just a little bit about it, because this is going to come back as a full episode, I think. I think we have to do it.
Yeah, please. I'm sorry. I'm getting distracted by looking at some of the imagery to come out of this event, as well as checking out the timesofisrael.com article that you posted, Ben. Sorry, I got a little lost in there just because I don't know a lot about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me want to dive in pretty deeply.
Well, yeah, so think about it this way. There's an excellent New Yorker article called Death of a Prosecutor from 2015, which is about Alberto Niesman's demise.
See, now I would have read that. Shout out. By the way, but I ran out of articles. So anyway.
Yeah, the paywall. By Dexter Filkins. So here's a way for us to bring this home. If you live in the U.S., imagine that one of the most famous courtroom prosecutors ever straight up said, "The president did 9/11, right? Like the president of the U.S. was in charge of this attack, or was in charge of covering it up. That's what happened with de Kirchner and Niesman. He said that this politician had orchestrated, at the very least, a plan to cripple the investigation in this attack. And this was the bloodiest terrorist attack in the entire history of the country. So here's what happened. There was a suicide van bomb attack, and the AMIA, the Asociación Mutual Israelita Argentina, is a big deal. Argentina is home to a large Jewish community, about 230,000 people, give or take. That is the largest in Latin America. It is, in fact, the sixth largest in the world outside of the nation of Israel. And when people started investigating this, things almost immediately got very murky and very dirty. You know, multiple countries and multiple individuals were accused of being involved. Obviously, this had to take some careful coordination and planning. This is not something that happened because one guy woke up and caught a wild hare. Even Pope Francis signed a petition for justice in the bombing case. The federal judge who was in charge of the case in August of 2005 was impeached and removed due to suspicions that he was purposely mishandling the investigation.
What?
Somebody doesn't want the public of Argentina to know how this all happened or who was behind this bloody, horrific attack. The prosecutor, Alberto Niesman, before he died, he had claimed in 2006 that Iran was targeting Argentina because Buenos Aires had decided to suspend a nuclear deal with Tehran. They were going to transfer nuclear technology. But people still, I don't know, people aren't 100% on that story because the contract itself between Iran and Argentina was never actually terminated. They were just negotiating from like 1992 to 1994 when the attack occurred. So Niesman is arguing that the president wanted to cover up Iran's role in the tragedy, role in the attack, because they needed the deal with Iran to work out. Mm. And by the way, when we say he died, he was murdered.
Yeah.
He didn't slip and fall. The guy was killed on purpose, premeditated. And if you look at the timeline, which we will do in our upcoming episode, it's pretty hard not to think that the murder was connected to his prosecutorial career.
Yeah, look, this is a dumb question, Ben, and I'm sorry, you probably already covered it, but is the official story that it was homicide, he was murdered, or is it still that he killed himself, or was it just that he was found dead with that, because I think there was a gun found by him. He was shot dead with a gun, there's a gun found with him or something?
Yeah, you're right. And to be more objective, I guess we should save our conclusions for the full episode there, Caro, but he was found dead in his house on January 18th, 2015, and there was a Bursa Thunder 22 handgun found beside him. And this was, again, just hours before he's going to the Congress of Argentina to talk about the paper he had published, which was like maybe a little south of 300 pages, 280-something. Anyway, according to the autopsy, once they found the body, he had actually died the previous day. That afternoon, on January 17th, is when he expired. They also found an entry bullet wound to his right temple with no exit wound. His body was in the bathroom. There were no signs of forced entry or robbery. And here's one. I'm just going to throw some plot twist at you, man. Okay, so no sign of forced entry, but a locksmith who was familiar with the guy's apartment said he found a hidden entrance to the apartment and that it was open.
What?
When he came on the scene. Yeah, right? Right?
Like a secret crawl space that was just hanging? What? Of course he had a secret entrance. I need to get one of those.
I know, we need them. You know, at one of my old houses, I actually made one. It was so bootleg. I just, you know, I have a lot of books. So I had like arranged shelves to make the room look smaller than it was.
Was it the cottage house?
The cottage house.
That one could have used a secret entrance.
Yeah, yeah. God, that was a weird place, man. We've lived in some weird places, folks. I used to live in a castle, no kidding, built by a very short man by hand.
It was made out of coral.
Yes. Just so. We are adding some levity here, but this is very much a serious case, and it's strange that there are so many questions that remain. One, yes, Niesman did own firearms. He had two guns that were registered. The gun that was found by him, this little 22 caliber, was not his. It was definitely the murder weapon, but it belonged to his assistant, who apparently lent it to him. That's the story so far. One of the guns was transferred to someone else in 2009. The other has yet to be found to this day. There's a test you can do to determine, there are a couple tests you can do to determine whether there's gunshot residue on someone's hands, and Niesman was clean. So it seems that unless the testing was off, it seems that he did not fire the gun himself. According to the investigators, there was no sign of like a physical attack or struggle. And one investigator even said there was nothing suggesting the presence of other people at the crime scene, other than, you know, the fact that there was a secret entrance to the guy's apartment and it was wide open. DNA from a second person was found in a coffee cup on the kitchen sink, or they announced that it was found. So there are still so many questions about this, and this is classic stuff they don't want you to know. We're going to dig into this. We're going to shake it, see what comes loose. We're going to pull the strings. We'll bag up the badgers. We'll go down a rabbit hole, all the idioms here. And while we're doing that, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, just some of the things that immediately stood out to us. But while we're working on that episode, we do want to give a shout out to a program on Netflix.
Oh, yes. And we have not watched this. I don't think I haven't watched this yet, but you can on Netflix find Niesman, the prosecutor, the mm-hmm. president, and the spy. You can find this right now, I believe. Yep, it's playing in my ears while I'm trying to talk to you, and it is distracting me. But it looks like it's a multi-part series here. It's an entire docuseries.
And the investigation continues. In March of 2015, a private investigation set up by Niesman's family concluded that his death was not suicide. It was an act of homicide. The report had gone pretty in-depth and sobering stuff. It contained pictures of his body as well. The forensic investigators that were originally appointed by Argentina's Supreme Court did say that it was a suicide, and it's become one of those conclusions that the public just doesn't accept. Similar ways to the JFK story here in the U.S., which is, as we found earlier, it is by far the most widely accepted conspiracy theory in this country. So with all this, got to throw in some other stuff. He was allegedly in touch with the CIA, the FBI, making some unofficial calls with the U.S. Embassy. He was accused of money laundering. This goes deep. What we're seeing here, really, Caro, it's not a lack of motive, and it's not a lack of suspects. It's quite the opposite. It's a wealth of possible motives. It's an abundance of possible suspects. Now it's sort of a needle in the haystack to figure out which one could have been responsible. And, you know, when we finish looking into this in this upcoming episode, it may be possible that we say he did commit suicide. I don't think we're going to find that, but that's what this show is about. That is what we do. And we are grateful to dive in with this. Give us a lead. We're dogs with a bone. What's another animal that has a thing we could say? I don't want to say dog with a bone anymore. I feel like that's been done.
Oh, I get it. We're cats with a cradle. What? Did I do that in a previous episode?
Platypus.
I just had deja vu.
We're a platypus with a papaya. No. Okay. They're not all going to work. So also send us your suggestions for idioms that we could use in place of dog with a bone.
A fancy chicken with what's an F thing we can put in there? Fancy or chicken
flangy.
Have you seen fancy chickens?
I did not know the conversation would go this way. Yeah, fancy chickens. They are fancy. It's not an ironic name. Right. They're super fancy.
They are fancy.
I just love the idea the first person who ran into them was like, that is one classy bird right there. That is a fancy chicken.
My God.
So give us your opinion on other fancy animals. What does a fancy chicken have with it? You know, the way that a dog has a bone. Oh my gosh. We're getting ourselves in deep water here, but we'll get to the surface. You know what I mean? We're not going to get Chappaquiddicked. but we are doing this with your help. As we always say, we are so grateful for your time, fellow conspiracy realists. We always get the best leads from you and from your fellow listeners. So thanks to everyone who has written in, who has contacted us. On a personal note, thanks to everybody who reached out to me regarding some recent events. I haven't responded to everybody, but I will try to do so. And maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more toward the end of the year. But in the meantime, the main point is, this show can't happen without you. So we want your help. Send us your ideas. Send us new leads. Tell us about other cover-ups. Tell us about other accidents that have occurred in the world of secret military experiments and projects. Tell us about other accidents that have occurred and been covered up in the world of the military. Tell us about murders by very wealthy people. People who got away clean. I'm sure there are sadly many out there. And tell us what you think of this bombing in 1994. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. And if you don't mind, if you've listened to this and you enjoyed it, why don't you head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show and give us a review. It just helps us out. Giving us a little more, oomph, right? A little makes our step a little nicer and increases the chances that we get to do this more often
and continue to do it. End of the year, if we get enough favorable reviews, our boss gets us a fancy chicken.
A live one. Yes. A live one that we get to keep as a friend, a pet.
Yeah.
Professor Fancy Pickles. And we're really excited about that.
Didn't go to chicken college for 8 years to be called Mr. Fancy Pickles. Oh, boy. Oh, what a week. Yes.
So what else can they do? Yes, if
you listen to episodes like Big Data, if you have somehow traveled forward in time and listen to our episode on workplace surveillance, which will be coming out. Hail, fellow time travelers.
Our job already knows.
Yeah. And you have listened to these things and decided to eschew social media, but you still want to contact us. Why not give us a good old telephone call? We are 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll have a brief message at the beginning. You'll have 3 minutes. Those minutes are your own. Go nuts. Get weird with it. We have some people who call us regularly, and it's almost like hearing a radio show. And it always makes my day. Talking to you, fog rolls in. And so we...
Viking. And you more broccoli, Sacramento, California.
Yes, absolutely. Join their ranks. All we ask is that you let us know if we can use your name and or voice on air. Give yourself a cool moniker. Who doesn't love those? Tell us what's on your mind. And most importantly, don't censor yourself. If you have a story that needs more than 3 minutes, write it out. Give us the ancillary links. Give us the images. Give us the video. We want it all. So drop us a line via electronic mail. We read every email we get where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.